Well, it's Father's Day, so congratulations to all dads. Fathers, as we know, are unique. They make a special contribution to the home and especially to the life and the development of their children. Children, of course, need a mother, but a mother is not a father. Kids need both a mother and a father, and fathers in particular are important in the development of their children. Studies show that children from fatherless homes are more likely to be poor, to be involved in drug and alcohol abuse, to drop out of school, to suffer from health and emotional problems. And boys are more likely to become involved in crime, and girls more likely to become pregnant as teenagers in homes without fathers. 71% of high school dropouts are fatherless. Fatherless children have more trouble academically and are less likely to attain academic and professional qualification in adulthood. Scholars at the Yale Children's Study Center record that having a father at home increases the likelihood that children will be healthier emotionally and socially, stronger cognitively and academically, and more stable throughout their lifetimes. They add, quote, "The fact that men and women parent differently for whatever complicated reasons is in most cases a great advantage for children." In other words, it's best for children to have a mother and a father at home raising the kids. It's good for a child to experience the different approaches of both the mom and the dad. Of course, we don't need academic studies to tell us the importance of both father and mother at home. God established the family, and God gave fathers an active role in raising the kids. Our authority, of course, in all of this is the Word of God. God has spoken. He's told us what he needs from fathers and mothers, and it's our obligation to fulfill our roles. Fathers need to make sure that they're carrying out and pursuing the biblical goals that God has given them. So today I want to look at fathers' responsibilities toward their children. I want to look, first of all, at the father's responsibility toward their children in general. That is what would be true of both boys and girls. And then I want to look at father's responsibility toward girls in particular, and then boys in particular. Boys and girls are different, and I think it's wise for fathers to approach the raising of their kids, boys and girls, a little bit differently. So fathers have a unique role in the lives of their daughters and their sons, and so let's look at these unique roles. But we'll first start about talking about the responsibility of fathers to their children in general. That is, how fathers are responsible, their roles, their responsibilities, which would be true whether you're talking about raising a son or a daughter. Let's briefly consult several passages that talk about a father's responsibility toward his children. First of all, I wanted to bring forth Genesis 18:19. If you would like to follow along in your passage in your Bible, you can do that. Otherwise, I'll just quote it, and you can just listen. Genesis 18:19 says, "I have known him," speaking of Abraham, "in order that he may command his children and household after him, that they may keep the way of the Lord to do righteousness and justice, that the Lord may bring to Abraham as he has spoken to him." So notice a couple of things from this verse here. He will command his children and household. Command them. That speaks of leadership. The father is the head of the house, and he ought to be the leader in the house. He ought to be the one setting forth the rules, the expectations, what his family is supposed to be doing. He says that they will keep the way of the Lord. So it's not enough simply to be the ruler or the leader of the household. You have to experience and put forth some spiritual leadership as well. The husband in a Christian family ought to be the spiritual leader of his household. Just like Joshua said, "As for me and my household, we will serve the Lord." So it's the Christian father's responsibility to make sure that his family is following the way of the Lord. And then to do righteousness and justice, to have things that are fair, to have things that are proper, to have rules and to make sure that those rules are followed, to make sure that everyone is doing honestly and fairly in the household. So these are typical things that the father would be responsible for, whether he has boys or girls or both. Also, David read a moment ago Deuteronomy 6, where it says, "These words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart, and thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. So parents are responsible to speak of the things of God in the household. They should be speaking about them, teaching them. The kids in your household should have knowledge of the things of God, the ways of God. The Bible should be an open book in your household. Kids should learn, of course, much about God at church, but the father in particular should not think that, well, I'm going to bring the kids to church and that's where they're going to learn about God. They ought to be learning about God in the home and in the church. So the father ought to make sure that the kids are hearing about the Word of God at home. And he can do that, obviously, by teaching the Word of God at things like, let's say, family devotions. I don't know how many of you have family devotions, but I would sincerely recommend having a devotional time when the family as a whole sits down and reads the Bible and prays and maybe sings, have some devotional time together. I think the father is responsible to make sure that that happens. It's not that hard to do. It doesn't have to be a long, drawn-out process. It can be 5 or 10 minutes. But I think it's a very good thing for the father to lead in family devotions. He's the spiritual head of the house. It's his responsibility to make sure that the kids learn the things of God. And so have the devotional time, have some devotional books, have some Bible story books so that the kids can learn and the parents will be teaching them in the household. That's a very important thing for fathers to make sure happens. Psalm 44, verse 1, we have heard with our ears, O God, our fathers have told us what works thou didst in their days, in the times of old. So fathers should be speaking about these things. They should be teaching these things. We heard it from our fathers. It's not good enough simply to hear it from your mothers. It ought to be from your fathers. Now, sometimes we know that it's only the mother who's interested in these things. But still, all things being equal, the ideal situation should be that the father is the one leading spiritually in the home. 1 Samuel 3:13 says, I have told him that I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knows, because his sons made themselves vile, and he did not restrain them. The operative words there in that passage, he did not restrain them. Now that's talking about the high priest Eli and the fact that he had a couple of sons who were sons of Belial. In other words, they were worthless men, even though they were priests serving God in the Levitical system, and yet the Bible says they were worthless, wicked men. And it says that Eli, although he warned them verbally, he did not restrain them. He let them do what they were doing, and it was an evil, wicked thing. Well, one of the main tasks of parents is that they restrain their children. That is, that they control them. And they prevent them from doing what they should not do. Today, unfortunately, many parents simply do not restrain their children. The kids run wild and make a general nuisance of themselves while the parents stand by and watch, oftentimes. My wife has told me various horror stories of the different events and programs that she has taken our kids to, let's say at the library or other places. And it's a group of people gathered together to hear a presentation, to hear a program, a special speaker is there. And invariably, there's usually a couple of kids who kind of ruin it for everybody because they run around and they are obnoxious and they're loud and they're creating all kinds of disturbances. And guess what the parents do? Nothing. They let their kids just run around, create disturbances, ruin the program for everybody else. And they don't do anything to restrain their children. Well, I think it's an obligation for parents to do exactly that. Restrain your kids. Now, how do children turn out who are not restrained? Well, here's what it says in Proverbs 29:15. The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. Usually people who are not restrained, children who grow up in an atmosphere with no restraint, generally, they grow up as spoiled brats, and we probably all know people who fit into that category whose parents simply did not restrain those kids, and they turned out very badly. And so one primary responsibility for the father is to restrain the kids, or at least make sure that somebody restrains them. If you fail to do that, you will regret it. And just as God held Eli responsible for the fact that he did not restrain his kids, God will hold you responsible, potentially, if you do not restrain your kids. Ephesians 6:4 is another verse talking about fathers. It says, ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. So notice that this idea of bringing up the children, although typically we think of the mother as the one who brings up the children, but in reality, the responsibility, the ultimate obligation here is addressed to fathers. Fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. The word nurture or training here means discipline. And my understanding is that probably the nuance here is referring to physical discipline. And we all recognize that from time to time, children need a little bit of physical discipline to keep them on the right path. In fact, we just read that verse in Psalms about the rod and reproof. Well, sometimes little Johnny needs a little bit of physical direction. And so that has to be part of the discipline system. They don't need abuse, but they certainly need physical training. The word translated admonition, I believe, has more of a verbal rather than a physical connotation. To admonish means to warn or to disciple verbally. And again, I don't think that that means that you scream at the child, but that you take the child and very intentionally and very calmly give that child verbal direction. Sometimes the child needs a verbal dressing down. Sometimes you need to raise your voice, but you shouldn't need to scream at the child. Still, there's a good place for verbal discipline. The goal of discipline is not only to change behavior, but also to change the child's attitude. Our desire is to change the hearts of our children, to help them develop an internal sense of right and wrong. We want to shape their consciences. The conscience is moldable. Your children need to learn the difference between right and wrong. They need to see the consequences of right and wrong. And the parents, and particularly the father, has the obligation of instilling within that child a degree of self-discipline so that they know the difference between right and wrong, and they have the desire to do what is right. That is something that does not come naturally to children. Children are born depraved sinners, just like all of us are, and that wisdom needs to be driven into them as folly is driven out of them. And sometimes that takes a long time to do. But parents, and particularly fathers, need to work at driving that wisdom into the child to change their attitude, to change their mind, help them to see the consequences of their behavior. We want to help them develop self-discipline and the ability to make good choices because they want to do what is right. Now, little children probably need more restraint than older children do. Sometimes I think people get it into their heads that, well, I'm going to let the little child run wild and do whatever the little child wants to do because he's just a little kid and can't understand. But then once they get to be a little bit older and become teenagers, that's when I really need to clamp down. Really, it's the other way around. You need to clamp down and be very restrictive over little kids so that they learn how to control themselves. And then as they develop, as they get a little bit older, as they become teenagers, they should have a degree of self-control. And by the time they're in their middle to upper teens, they know what's right and wrong. They know how to control themselves. And then you can give less restriction. And hopefully with the ultimate goal of letting them go, when they leave your house, they're not going to implode. They're not going to explode. They're going to continue on because they've been taught the way of the Lord. And hopefully they'll take that to heart. So we want to have that inner change, that inner attitude is really the desire of discipline, is not simply to control their behavior, but to help them to adopt a true sense of right and wrong, a biblical sense of morality. And then finally, regarding these verses, 1 Timothy 5:8, if any man provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he has denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. And so God holds fathers responsible to provide for their children. Every father is responsible to take care of those kids that he brought or helped bring into the world. Dad should provide for the basic needs, at least, of his children. Food, clothing, shelter, education. And Paul says here it's a very serious sin if you don't do that, if you fail to provide for your own children. He says you're worse than an infidel, worse than an unbeliever. Even unbelievers provide for their own children in most cases. And he says here, if somebody claims to be a Christian and fails to provide for his own children, well, he's worse than an unbeliever. And one of the great problems we know in our culture today is that men often don't provide for their own kids. You've heard of deadbeat dads, men who help bring children into the world and then don't take care of them, don't provide anything for them. Well, obviously, Christian fathers should never be accused of being a deadbeat dad. These responsibilities are true for all fathers and generally applicable to all children, whether boys or girls. These are kind of the general responsibilities that fathers have toward children. And whether we are fathers today or maybe some prospective fathers who may be having children in the future, we need to accept and adopt these responsibilities for ourselves. We need to see that this is the biblical picture. These are the responsibilities. And if you're a father, whether you're father of a boy or a girl, this is what you're obligated to do. Let's go on then to look at a father's responsibility to his daughters. A father's role toward his daughter is different from that of his son or sons. I think we operate clearly under a biblical truth that boys and girls are different and that they require different treatment from their fathers. Now, I'm speaking in general terms this morning, I guess. Every person is a little bit different, so we can't necessarily say that all girls need this treatment and all boys need this treatment. Obviously, there's a good deal of flexibility here depending upon the individual person. I think there are some general principles here that apply to raising girls that are different from raising boys. Does the Bible give us a picture of what we want our girls to turn out to be? Well, yes, Proverbs 31 is the virtuous woman passage. In other words, we want our goal in parenting is to develop a godly woman that fits the categories of the virtuous woman as given in Proverbs 31. And of course, there are other examples, there are other teachings about what a woman ought to be. Now, can you guarantee that that's going to happen? No, you can't. Nobody's perfect, and sometimes, you know, people are exceptions rather than the rule. But still, it is the parents' obligation to try. It ought to be their desire. It ought to be a picture in their mind of this is the kind of young woman that I'm trying to produce here. This is what we want to see in her life. These characteristics, these attributes, by the time she leaves, we want her to have those characteristics of the virtuous woman. And so the father has a role in helping his girl or girls become godly women. Now, I shouldn't have to inform you that that is not the desire of the world today. I've been doing some reading recently on worldly trends and culture, and believe me, the world does not want your daughters to turn out to be the, you know, virtuous woman of Proverbs 31. That is exactly what they don't want. They don't want the girl or the woman to be restricted by these biblical categories of morality. They want the exact opposite. So there's a great struggle going on in our culture today, and every father has to struggle against the current of opposition toward biblical goals and biblical norms and biblical standards. And so this is where the fathers really have to try to instill this into their daughters, and godly girls, godly Christian women, young women, as they grow up, they need to adopt these patterns and these guidelines and standards for themselves to see that this is the goal of the parenting, nurturing, training of that individual, that little daughter as she grows up. The goal is to bring her to the place where she has that Proverbs 31 virtue, because the world wants just the opposite, so we have to fight against that. In what ways, then, do girls require special attention from their fathers? Well, I think, first of all, girls need protection. I think one category that we can definitely agree on is that girls need protection. The husband or the father is responsible to protect, of course, the whole family, and he should be particularly protective of his girls, and I think that's true in several ways. First of all, fathers provide physical protection. The father is responsible to provide a home environment that is safe. He's responsible to protect his family from harm and from mishap or threat. We've probably heard those very distressing stories about what has happened in the past to certain young ladies as, well, we can come up with terrible stories that we've heard that happen to young women. And obviously the father is the protector of the household, protector of the family, needs to make sure that he prevents that from happening. So not that it happens, not that these terrible, tragic stories happen very frequently, but we hear about them in the news. They do happen. And we need to be very careful that we are there, you know, guarding our family to make sure that these terrible things don't happen to our children, our daughters especially. Fathers also provide spiritual protection. They're responsible to teach the truth and to shield their girls from spiritual error. The father is the spiritual leader of the household, and he should both teach the truth as well as shield the family, protect his girls from bad ideas, wrong, evil ideas. And under that category, I would put the protection of the children, the girls, against feminism. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with what feminism is, but there are some very bad ideas in the feminist movement. And like I said, the world would love to capture the girls and to make them raving feminists. That's what the culture wants to do. And obviously, we need to stand against that. Fathers need to protect and to prevent that kind of thing from happening to their girls. Be alert to these bad ideas that might affect his daughters. And those bad ideas often penetrate the home through television, through movies, through the internet, even through modern music. And so fathers ought to control the entertainment that their kids are consuming. Now, I don't know if you are tracking. I imagine most of us are not tracking modern entertainment, and especially modern music. But the elements of modern music today that teenagers are consuming is absolutely shocking. And if you did not know about it, I wouldn't suggest you really investigate it. I don't, but every so often things come through the news. And some of the things that goes on in contemporary music, entertainment, obviously through internet, through videos, it is absolutely shocking. And you would be surprised how easy it is to have access to this junk, this garbage that's out in the world today. And so this is where fathers cannot simply be gullible or innocent, thinking that their innocent little daughter would never watch these kind of videos. Their innocent little daughter would never listen to this kind of terrible, you know, modern music. But you don't know. If you don't know, you don't know, right? You don't know what you don't know. So your little supposedly innocent daughter might be, she wouldn't be the first one to, you know, hide that from her parents. And so this is where fathers need to do some investigation and make sure that their kids are not accessing this garbage, this absolutely horrendous kind of material that's out there today. At our house, we have a thing called an internet filter. We have some software that we put on our computers so that a lot of this stuff doesn't even get through. We don't allow hardly any of the modern music in our household at all, but obviously we have internet devices and various things, but we have filters so that the garbage really cannot get through. And I get a report virtually every day. I get a report of what is going on the internet devices that our daughters might be accessing. So I feel like it is my obligation to make sure that that stuff does not get through to my daughters. I don't want them to be affected by that. I don't want them to see that material, hear about it, or have any kind of influence from that in their lives. Once they see that stuff, it cannot be unseen. Once they hear about that, you can't undo it. And so the best thing to do is to try to keep, especially, I think, daughters innocent as long as possible. I mean, you know, rationally speaking, you don't want them to be affected by that kind of thing. Smartphones are another issue that you need to be very careful about. Handheld computers, essentially. And kids today get into a lot of trouble through smartphones. And I'm not going to get into the details of what kids do today through texting and other kinds of things, TikTok and other videos and pictures and all this kind of thing. Young people, teenagers get involved with that and they get into huge trouble because of it. And so again, who's responsible to be the gatekeeper? Who's responsible to try to prevent that kind of material from entering your family? I think it is the father. Obviously, fathers and mothers work together on that. But typically, fathers are a little bit more, perhaps, technically savvy, and they can do things to prevent those kinds of things from getting through. So that's spiritual protection. Also, social protection. In other words, relationships. Parents should be involved in their children's relationships, especially when potential romantic interests begin developing. Children are under the authority and care of their parents, particularly their father, until they leave home. It should be. I mean, ideally, you want your child to grow up under the care of the father, parents, really. And then what happens at marriage? At marriage, the father hands over his daughter to the husband. And so now the girl goes under the protection of the husband. Now, sometimes it doesn't work that way. We know that things are not ideal in every case. But typically, you would want, as a father, to protect your daughter until she gets under the protection of her husband. And you want that protection to be there throughout the girl's life. So protecting one socially, again, I think it's particularly necessary for girls to have a father who's protecting and watching out for them. Girls, of course, can pick up a lot of bad influence from their friends and from relationships. And we all know that I think girls are typically wired for relationships. Deep, personal, intimate relationships with other people. They often enjoy those. They like having lots of friends and acquaintances. And some of these friendships, because they can be so intimate and deep, they can be very influential. And so, again, we need to be very careful. Fathers, I think, particularly, need to be careful to watch those relationships to make sure that if there's one that is negative or damaging, that it is not allowed to continue on. Now, I'm not advocating a helicopter approach to parenting, where the father hovers over his daughter all the time and micromanages every aspect of the daughter's life. What would that be? Remember, it says, provoke not your children to wrath. For those of you who are young girls, how would you like your father, you know, over your shoulder, hovering over you every minute of the day, micromanaging every choice that you make? Well, the father might say, yeah, that's what I'm going to do to make sure I protect my daughter. But a daughter obviously might find that very troubling and might react with bitterness and antagonism against a father who wants to just micromanage every little thing that the daughter does. So I'm not advocating that, but the father should be protective of his daughters, especially when they're young and impressionable. And like I said, if you are strict and stern when they're young, you can ease up on that restriction and sternness as they get older and as they develop a sense of self-control and as they have adopted, you know, biblical parameters and biblical morality for themselves. By the time they leave your home, you won't have to be very restrictive at all. They'll have a lot of freedom. But I think you begin that process with a fairly stern and strict approach when they're young. Under this category, I'd also put things like modesty. I think fathers have a sense of what would be modest or immodest that perhaps their mother, a woman, might not have. Just to be blunt, fathers are men, okay? You probably know that, but men have a particular point of view, a particular set of interests when it comes to women, and especially attractive women. And when an attractive woman is dressed immodestly or too skimpily or too tightly adorned or whatever, there are certain things that happen within the mind and the heart of a man, which might not happen to the woman, to the mother, who just doesn't see it that way. Any decent father would not want his daughter going out in public looking like a streetwalker, if you know what I mean. A father should be there to say, that hemline is too high. That set of jeans is too tight. That blouse is too revealing. From a man's point of view, the father can say, I know what it looks like when a woman dresses too revealing. And I don't want my daughter stepping out in public in a way that is that way. I don't want men thinking of my daughter in those terms. And so go put on something that covers up a little bit more flesh. You know, go put on something that's not quite so tight. Because as a man, I know how men think. And I don't want men thinking about my daughter in that way. So that's where a man's perspective might be a little bit different than what a woman's might be. So there's protection. Secondly, there's affection. Girls need affection. I think girls naturally want to experience the affection from their fathers. If their father is not affectionate, it could be that the girls seek affection from another source, from somewhere else. And of course, that can have disastrous results. Girls should experience plenty of love and affection from their dads so that they won't go looking for it elsewhere. Where does a girl learn how a boy should treat her? From her father, assuming that he treats her right. If the father has treated her with godly affection and care, then I think she'll demand that from any boys in her life, especially any boys who might be interested in her romantically. If the father has treated her right with dignity and affection and care, then that's what she'll demand from any boy who is interested in her. Girls also need illustration, in other words, an example to follow. Most daughters will eventually, of course, grow up and be married. And so a father can set the example for the kind of man that that girl would want to marry. Not that girls, of course, are going to marry somebody exactly like their dad, but hopefully the father has set an example in the household so that when the girls grow up, what are they looking for? They're looking for somebody like dad. They know what a good father is because they had a good father. They knew what a good husband is because their mom married a good husband. They know what to look for because their father modeled that before them. And so when it comes time for the girl to choose the boy she's going to marry, she'll have a picture in her mind of what a good husband and a father looks like. And it should be, hopefully, much like her dad. At our house, we have Patch the Pirate playing a lot of the time during the day. And Patch the Pirate has a little song, "I Want to Marry Daddy When I Grow Up." Have you heard that before? So obviously children don't realize that they can't marry daddy. But the idea of that, I think, is really sweet and really wonderful, that the little girls, as they grow up, when they think of, you know, Prince Charming, or they think of the model husband and father, they think of daddy. They think of, they want that same kind of person. When they grow up and become of marriageable age and status, they want to marry somebody just like daddy. And so girls need to see how men should treat women. And their fathers need to demonstrate proper behavior toward women so that they, the little girl, as she's growing up, they can see, okay, this is how a man is supposed to behave. I want to look for somebody who's like my dad, who treats my wife, or treats his wife right, treats my mom right, treats other women right, has the right attitude toward women. That's the kind of person that I'm interested in. And so fathers should demonstrate proper behavior toward women in general, and daughters should learn to expect from boys and men the same kind of treatment that she received at home from her father. Also, girls need instruction. Instruction. Now, I think mothers typically teach girls how to be a woman or all the things about being a woman. But as the girls get older, fathers, I think, should have some input as well regarding things like relationships and romance and attraction and dating. Girls might have questions that they want to ask their dads about, particularly, what about this boy? What about this guy? You know, what is it like from a guy's perspective, or what should I be thinking about, or what is this boy thinking about as he's with me? So fathers should teach the girls what is to be expected, what their father expects. What kind of boy would you be allowed to date or marry? Now, our daughter's pretty young, but we've already told her, you're not marrying this kind of guy, you're not marrying that kind of guy. This is what we're looking for, this is what we expect, this is what's acceptable, this is what's unacceptable. So when it comes that time for the girl to think about that sort of thing, they ought to be thinking, you know, what have my parents taught me? What is the kind of boy that they would approve of? What is the correct behavior from a boy? You know, what kind of behavior is within limits? What kind of behavior is off limits? You know, here's what you do if a boy does this. Here's how to slap a boy across the face. Here's how to disable a boy so that you can run away. You know, that's the kind of teaching maybe that a father would teach his daughter. So fathers need to emphasize to their girls that it's important to follow the biblical guidelines of female behavior and roles. I think the mother, of course, often teaches the womanly aspects of all this, but the father, I think, can also teach his daughters, here's what we are looking for. We expect you to adopt the biblical morality, the biblical pattern. We want you to be a virtuous woman. We're expecting you to be that. And we would be very happy, no matter who you marry, if you would follow the biblical guidelines. You know, we want to be a big happy family. We want to be excited and happy about the person that you're about to marry or that you're interested in. And if the person has these qualities and these characteristics, we would be very happy to see you get married. And that, I think, leads to the final point, and that is that girls need communication. Females, I think, in general, value communication more than males do. You know, a typical male interaction or conversation, how are you doing? Fine. Okay, great. That's it. That's all you need, you know. But women, they have to go, you know, talk all the way around the world, and that's fine. I mean, I think it's typical that females have a more relational style that oftentimes men don't have. So it's a good idea, I think, for fathers and daughters to keep an open channel of communication. Your daughters should know that they can come to you at any time and talk to you about, you know, virtually anything. Fathers should be approachable. If the girl has a question about boys or about relationships, she should feel comfortable asking her dad. I think dad should have kind of an open door policy. If your daughter wants to have a serious conversation, it's more important than the ball game, more important than going fishing, although that's very important. But more important than that is, you know, your interaction with your daughter. More important than virtually anything is having an important conversation with your daughter, because you don't know how that could affect the rest of her life. She might be ready to have a conversation with you that's going to be hugely impactful for the rest of her days. So you want to be open to that, have that kind of approachable willingness to talk with your daughter. If you want to have a continuing influence on the life of your girls, you have to have those lines of communications open. And so if your girl comes up to you with one of those, you know, kind of awkward questions, you don't just say, go ask your mother. I don't want to deal with that one. You know, if your daughter is asking you for your perspective as a man, as her father, I think you want to be willing to talk in specific terms about what those things are and what her questions and what her concerns might be. So girls want input from their dads, and dads should be willing to talk about the things that their daughters are interested in. So the father is really the first man in the life of a girl, the first man that she knows. Typically speaking, I mean in a regular, normal nuclear family, the man of the house, the father, is the first man that girl knows and is aware of. A girl typically learns a lot about boys and men from her father. Fathers should want their daughters to learn from them and not from other bad sources. So don't expect a mother to raise your girls. If you're a father and you have girls, don't just shuffle all that off to the mother. The mother's going to do all the raising of the girls because, you know, she knows all the womanly type of things that need to be taken care of. I'm just a father. I'm a dude. I don't know about girls. So let the wife take care of all those things. No, the father needs to have a major role in the raising of girls. Fathers have an important role to play in that task. Let's go on then and look at a father's responsibility to his sons. And so, like I said, I think it's a little bit different what a son needs than what a daughter needs. Now, I don't have any personal experience raising sons. I am a son, but I never had any sons. So what I'm talking about is not really just from personal experience, although obviously I had personal experience being raised as a son, but I don't have personal experience raising sons. But I think we still have biblical principles here that we can go to. First of all is masculinity. I think one of the key things that a father needs to instill within his son is biblical masculinity. Now, unfortunately, the Bible doesn't give us one single place that you can go to get a picture of biblical masculinity. Unlike with a woman, the virtuous woman, you just know automatically Proverbs 31. That's the picture. That's the story, the description of a virtuous woman. Where can you go for that picture or description of the virtuous man? Well, there's not one particular place in Scripture, although I think we do have prominent examples like Joseph and Paul and Daniel and even Jesus, of course. They give us some of those pictures of biblical masculinity. And so in any case, the goal for the Christian father is to develop his sons so that they will fulfill the role of sons and the role of husband and father. He wants to duplicate himself in his sons. He wants to develop within his sons a sense of biblical masculinity. The Bible warns us to avoid effeminacy in males. In fact, that word in the King James is used, effeminate, in 1 Corinthians 6:9. The biblical word effeminate literally means soft, and it refers to the softness that women should have. Women should be soft, but men should not be soft in that way. Men should not be girlish. Now, we know that sometimes, in some cases, little boys may display a degree of girlishness, but normally they grow out of that. Typically speaking, even if a little boy is a little bit effeminate as he's growing up, generally speaking, they grow out of that. And fathers should help them grow out of that. Fathers should help the boy to be masculine. The other day I was waiting to talk to somebody at a local restaurant, and as I was waiting, a guy came in the door, but this was a guy dressed like a girl. He was clearly a guy, but he was dressed like a woman. He had on long black tights. He had on a black frilly dress. He had on, if I remember right, a necklace and earrings. And as he passed by, he had many of the features of a woman, but you could tell that he was a dude. And I was standing there with another guy, and I said, "Was that a guy?" And this fella knew him. And he said, "Yeah, he's a nice guy, but he likes to dress like a girl." Well, that guy is messed up in many ways, And I would bet, if I was a betting man, I would bet $100 that that guy did not have a father who instilled within him the correct form of masculinity. Now, I don't know that guy's background, but generally speaking, masculinity often comes from the work of the father in the life of the child. And if you have a boy who's dressing up like a woman, well, you've got some serious error, some serious problems happening there that I would trace back to the father or the lack of the work of the father in that child's life. Effeminacy can also describe the moral softness of self-indulgence, self-centeredness, and self-preservation. One could be effeminate in the sense of shirking his duty or protecting himself when he should be protecting others or seeking pleasure and avoiding pain. Fathers should help their son develop a masculinity that is true to the Bible, a sense of moral backbone and moral strength and moral leadership. Biblical masculinity is characterized by spiritual maturity, courage, diligence, and leadership. And I think characters like Joseph and Daniel and Paul and Jesus are the characters that we look to for this sense of biblical masculinity. That's what we want to see developing in the life of our boys. So fathers, I think, play a role in developing a biblical sense of masculinity in their sons. And let me just say before we go on here, sort of in passing, but an important matter, and that is that the world today is telling us to accept and affirm whatever tendencies we see within our children. If a boy is effeminate or girlish, the culture is saying, that's okay. Just embrace the child for who it is. If that child has girlish, a boy has girlish and feminine tendencies, well, maybe he's homosexual. Maybe he's going to be transgender. And you should just allow that boy to express whatever feminacy he might have. That's a good thing. It's okay. In fact, in some places, if a boy expresses his desire to be a girl, let's say he expresses that to the school authorities, and the parents react against that and say, no, we don't want our boy raised in that way. We don't want our boy thinking about the fact or the idea that he might be transgendered. Do you know, you probably heard in the news, the authorities will react against that, and they might call child social services to take that child out of the home because the child thinks of himself in an effeminate way, and the parents are standing against that. So this is the kind of society in which we live today, in which everybody is expected to, you know, if you have a certain feeling or a certain tendency or a certain idea within your mind, you must actualize that. You must act on that. You cannot go against that because you are who you are. You're born this way and nothing can change it. Well, yes, you can change it. And if you are a man who has an effeminate boy, you need to work very diligently and very fervently to instill within that child a sense of masculinity. And so that is something that we ought not to simply allow, something that, well, this is what the culture is telling us. We have to go along with whatever tendencies this child has. No, you work diligently to resolve that situation. So sons should develop a biblical masculine identity, and it's largely the father's task to install that within his sons. Secondly is restraint. We've already talked about that a little bit. 1 Samuel 3:13, he did not restrain them. And boys need restraint, typically speaking. Here's a startling statistic for you. 93% of inmates in the jail or the prison system are male. 93%. Why do you think that's the case? Well, it's because males typically are more squirrely. They're more active. They're more likely to rebel. They're more interested in illegal activity. All things being equal, boys tend to get into more troubles than girls do. Males are more willing to take risks. They're more interested in showing off and breaking the rules. So males typically need more restraint. And so that's the father's job, and I think that's particularly the father's job as the boy gets a little bit older. The boy, typically 13, 14, 15 years old, the mother can no longer restrain that child. The mother can no longer impose, you know, physical discipline on that child. The boy, by the time he gets to be 13, 14, 15 years old, is probably stronger and maybe bigger than his mother is. In fact, he may be stronger and bigger than his father is. So there's got to be that kind of recognition that the father needs to restrain the child as a youth, as a very young child, to develop within him that respect for the father, so that when the child gets older, he will have respect for his dad and a degree of self-control for himself. So boys, I believe, want restraint. They want that set of rules. They want to know the consequences of violating the rules of the home. Sons know intuitively that lack of restraint equals lack of love. I mean, if you have a dog and that dog is prone to running in the street, you probably are going to discipline that dog. But you may have a son who's prone to wandering throughout the whole town and doing all kinds of immoral things. And if there's no discipline for that, the child recognizes nobody cares about me. I can do whatever I want and nobody cares. Nobody disciplines. Nobody even tells me I shouldn't do what I'm doing. Well, oftentimes, boys especially will do bad things, illegal things, wrong things, simply to get the attention of their father or their parents, because they recognize that if I do wrong, there should be consequences. And so they want those consequences, really, whether they admit that or not. Now, on the other hand, too much restraint, I think, will backfire. You don't want to be overly severe and restrictive, because that, again, provokes the children to wrath. So there is that balance there. As the child shows more self-control, I think he can ease up on the restriction and the restraints. And that gets into the next one, which is discipline, which is kind of a similar idea. I think generally it's true that boys need more discipline than girls do. Young girls, we know girls can often be very sensitive, very tender. You know, the mother or the father gives the child kind of a cross look or raises the voice, and the little girl just dissolves into tears. That can happen sometimes. Boys, on the other hand, especially as they get older, they don't necessarily dissolve into tears with a cross look or raised voice. I can remember I was probably, I'm guessing, 12 or 13 years old, and it suddenly dawned on me that I didn't care what my dad did to me. He was spanking me, and I just remember thinking, I don't care if this guy spanks me. Well, that can be a bit of a problem, because boys, I think as they get a little bit older, they kind of come into their own a little bit, and they start thinking, hey, I'm a man. You know, I'm 13 years old. I'm a man. I can take it. I can take this old man if he gives me too much trouble, you know. A couple more years, I'll be able to beat up my dad. Well, you get a little bit cocky. And so this is where, again, boys need that discipline, perhaps a more stern form of discipline than what girls do. Then there's training as well, training. A father ought to be intentional about passing on his knowledge to his sons. Boys ought to learn how to be a man from their dad. They ought to learn how to do manly things from their dad. Boys ought to learn about how to fix appliances or fix things around the house that need to be fixed. They need to learn how to, you know, hammer a nail and saw a board and drive a screw and all the kind of manly things that the man is responsible to do around the house, how to paint, how to, you know, take care of things, how to solve plumbing problems. You know, this is what men are typically responsible to do. And I think the goal of the father ought to be to impart as much of that knowledge to the son before the son goes off and leaves home. And it's kind of unfortunate, I guess, in my case, I regret the fact that my dad, I should maybe put it this way, that I didn't take those opportunities to learn as much as I should have from my dad. My dad, for whatever reason, was not, he didn't force me to come along with him to fix the things around the house, so I never really learned a lot about that from him. He never forced me to help him when he's fixing the car. He never showed me how to do an oil change or how to, you know, change a tire. So many of the things that he knew about, I just wasn't interested in, and he wasn't interested in teaching me. So I had to learn all that stuff on my own. I remember getting out of high school, going into the military, and all of a sudden I had a car to take care of. I don't know how to take care of a car. So I had to learn from other people how to take care of a car. So those are the kinds of things that my dad should have taught me. And really, it's the father's responsibility, I think, that he teaches the skills that he has to his son so that when the son leaves home, he's ready to be a husband and a father. He knows how to do those manly things that are expected of a husband and a father. And then finally, his example. As they say, much more is caught than is taught. Children learn from watching the example of their parents. And if the parents are living in a certain way, typically speaking, the children think that's the right way to live. This is how we're supposed to do family life, is the how my parents did it. I learn how to be a parent from my parents. I follow that example. And I think fathers need to set the example of how boys interact with girls. Again, just like the girl, the daughter at home is learning what to expect from a boy, the boy is learning how to behave as a man. He follows the example of his father. So if the father treats women with dignity and respect, if he shows kindness and care for women in his life, well then the son obviously, hopefully, would pick up that same idea. So boys in a Christian home should learn how to be a Christian man from their dad. Setting the example is very important. Well, as I said, fathers are unique and they provide a unique set of parenting skills that simply mothers don't typically have. Mother and father are not interchangeable. If either the mother or the father is absent or they fail to carry out their obligations, the children will suffer negative results. Both the mom and the dad contribute to their own set of influences to their children. These differences between the father and the mother are good. The father typically parents a little bit differently than the mother does, and he ought to approach parenting men or boys differently than he does girls. Fathers in particular have a very important set of contribution to make to their children as they grow up. Fathers contribute differently to boys and to girls. All children need parenting, obviously, but girls and boys need different things from their parents. Fathers should be careful to provide what their children need from them, especially those things that nobody else can provide. So to be involved in the life of your children is a great privilege, but it's not easy. Biblical fatherhood is a difficult role, but it's also a great privilege. Those who are striving to fulfill the duties of a father in the household deserve special recognition every day, but especially on Father's Day. Well, let's close in prayer.